righty. We are going to call the Health and Human Services Budget Division to order for April 15th and roll out the delete everything that for to Senate File 1034 that will be the Senate's Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill. Now that we are on the record, I will repeat much of what I just said, you know, to try to inform the room so that it's on the record. We are getting started a little bit later than we anticipated. Bill copies are being rolled outside right now. Pages are going to try to make these available, but this room isn't the very best room. One copy per person. No grabbing stacks, but we did make 150 copies. It is being uploaded to the website right now. The spreadsheets are also being uploaded to the website right now and will be made publicly available. Members have just received theirs. We did get authorization to continue our Health and Human Services meeting into session about, you know, maybe 15 minutes if they actually get started. All members, we've alerted the desk to make sure that all members have an excuse at the desk for not being present. The intention is to get through walking through the spreadsheet this morning and then go up. We do have some important bills to discuss on the Senate floor today. So we'll try to get through the spreadsheet this morning, go up to session. Hopefully, members and some of the public will have enough time to have their concerns and support for provisions of this bill ready to ask some questions this afternoon and evening. We'll do some members' questions. We'll open it up to the public for some testimony. We'll try to do that until, sometime this evening. When people get tired, I guess, and then tomorrow morning we will come back and continue with public testimony, hopefully complete public testimony before session tomorrow. We'll go take care of session tomorrow and get back and start entertaining amendments, and we will the plan is to go tomorrow night until we're through entertaining amendments, taking appropriate action, and hopefully vote on this bill tomorrow evening. It might be a late one before we get ready for that, so members can be prepared. And then this bill would be referred to the Finance Committee for a hearing. Thursday is the schedule for the bill. So with that, I will turn over the gavel, and I will come up to present Senate File 1034.
Madam Chair,
Senator Rosen,
we are looking for our spreadsheets. The Republicans,
they're being passed out right now.
Well, you have
the full ones. We don't have any full ones.
The big ones.
Say them.
We're looking for
the second handle. Senator Lurie, we're just passing the first handout.
It's this one. Madam Chair, it is the budget proposal tracking where the all funds are tracked on one page to really try to give members and the public a good sense of money and how it's flowing. One thing that I failed to mention is that I said in the intro before we opened it up for the public that we were proofing the appropriations article and making photocopies of that, so that is not in the room yet. As soon as the 150 copies of that are available, they will be brought up here, and we will distribute the appropriations article as soon as possible. And again, all of this will be public on the website as soon as it is able. It is a 501 page bill. It's going to take a little bit of time to upload. That's minus the appropriations article, again, that will be coming. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Senate fiscal staff to step through the spreadsheets.
Welcome, Mr. Albert. Please state your name for the record. And
yeah.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Dennis Albrecht. I'm the fiscal analyst for the Health and Human Services Committee in the Senate. The document that you have in front of you, the one-page document that looks like this, is... I only brought their copies of this.
This is what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Do you have their copies?
She has them.
Okay.
Yeah, is that her name?
Yeah.
Or what they were. Madam Chair, I think with all of the focus in the Senate on the budget target, some things kind of get lost in the discussion. So I wanted to just start with a broad overview of the structure of the Senate's bill and the structure of the governor's bill, and to point out that when you do see the appropriations article for all funds, it appropriates $12.8 billion, and out of the general fund, it creates what appears to me to be about $11.2 billion. In both of the governor's budget proposal and in the Senate's budget proposal, there are three really important numbers. One is the target, and the other two numbers are how do you achieve the target. That's what this sheet intends to explain. So I'm going to direct you to columns A and B. Column A is the governor's budget. Column B is the Senate's budget. And on line 7 are the general fund totals for the governor and for the Senate. So you'll see $109 million for the governor and $403 million for the Senate. And that is not an apples-to-apples comparison. In the governor's budget, for what are very valid reasons, the governor chose to spend directly out of the Health Care Access Fund what the Senate has characterized as general fund expenditures. The governor's budget was built around the assumption that the appropriations out of the Health Care Access Fund were paying for historically eligible populations eligible for Minnesota care, and so their reasoning was that it's an appropriate use of the Health Care Access Fund to pay for those populations. The Senate did not do that, and that's why these numbers look so different. So if you take the governor's number of $109.5 million and add the amount of that, which is $413.5 million, the comparative general fund spending for the governor would be about $523 million compared to the Senate's $403 million. The next important piece of the structure is revenue, and this story is on line 25 of this sheet. So you'll see that the governor's number in column A is a positive number of about $26 million. That represents a loss of revenue to the general fund. Versus on the Senate's side, there's a minus $553 million. Minuses in this case are increases in revenue to the general fund. This same $413 million comes into play here because instead of spending that money directly out of the Health Care Access Fund as the governor does, the Senate essentially transfers it into the general fund. So if you adjust the governor's number to match up in an apples-to-apples comparison, the governor's comparative revenue would be $388 million to the Senate's $553 million. And Madam Chair, I know that's a lot of numbers and a lot of comparing, but the point is to try and give you an apples-to-apples perspective on how the individual targets were reached. And with that, we can move on to the next, to the spreadsheet that is the overall portion, the largest portion of the appropriations. Take a couple more questions. Pass it out.
To the public.
We're going to be distributing that spreadsheet to the public at this moment.
Unless they're going to be quiet. Madam Chair, it looks to me like most of the people, at least in this room, have received a spreadsheet, so I think it would be a good time to begin. As I walk through here, I'm going to focus primarily on the general fund. That's what the target deals with. There are, in some instances, spending out of general funds or state government special revenue funds. I will point to those when it's appropriate. I think the place to start is on line 7. Just so everyone is clear, we are only going over the Senate side. This is not a review of the governor's budget. It's only a review of what is in the Senate's bill. So generally, if there's a bunch of zeros on the Senate side, it means it's not in the bill. I will point out when that is not the case.
Yeah.
On line 7, you can see in the fiscal year 14-15 column, there's a minus 152,828. That is the Senate's target. It is a reduction to the general fund of $153 million. If you go to page 2, on line 85 is the beginning of the change items in the budget. The first is a governor's proposal. These are what are characterized as the Affordable Care Act compliance provisions. By the end of fiscal year 2015, these provisions will result in an additional 61,000 people enrolled in the MA program, and by the end of 17, 67,000 individuals. In the interest of time, because I know you all have places to be, I'm not going to talk about the numbers all that much. This one is $138 million, so just add 3 zeros, that's how you get the numbers. Is that okay? On line 96 is the other Affordable Care Act provision. This is typically referred to as the MOE provision. By the end of fiscal year 2015, this will result in an additional 10,000 enrollees in medical assistance, and by the end of fiscal year 2017, 13,000 people. Line 103 is the governor's recommendation for emergency medical assistance coverage for cancer and dialysis. Turning the page on page 3, line 109 is a Senate proposal for emergency medical assistance eligibility grants.
There were several proposals to try to improve the EMA program more than just the governor's cancer dialysis and or kidney dialysis and cancer treatments. We were having trouble figuring out which ones were ready for prime time. One of the things that was absolutely demonstrated was that many of these individuals, actually with some help with paperwork, could get the status they need to move on to some other program effectively. So this is a really targeted use of funds to provide maybe the some nonprofit that can help people with their paperwork and move them off of EMA onto some much more beneficial program. It appeared to us the best bang for the buck in terms of helping these individuals on top of what the governor did.
Mr. Albert.
Madam Chair, on line 113 is Senate File 699, Senator Pappas's coverage for doulas beginning July 1st, 2014. On line 118 is part of Senator Hayden's Senate File 1099 that allows MA coverage for separate encounters on the same day. This is a provision that addresses an issue that FQHCs have. On line 123 is Senator Hayden's Senate File 777. This deals with MA eligibility for inmates. And the costs on the Human Services side are offset by savings on the DOC side, and there is an interagency agreement for the two agencies to exchange money.
And on that provision, members will recall that the counties are very, very big winners on this one. I think on the order of about $5 million per year in savings that they won't have to expend on medical care for inpatient services given to county prisoners.
Mr. Albrecht.
Madam Chair, on line 130 is the Senate's PMAP MERC provisions, which is half of the governor's level and involves a different formula. On line 134 is the Senate's rate increases based on the governor's proposal for MA rate increases for certain service categories. The Senate's version is delayed 1 year, effective 7/1/2014, and does not include the governor's increases for dentists. On line 141 is a Senate position for critical access dental. This provision brings in a number of new critical access providers and provides a 5% increase to those providers and all existing critical access dental providers. On line 149 is a Senate's position that will align the forecast assumptions with respect to managed care rates to reflect the rate increases in recent contracts negotiated with the managed care plans for the medical assistance program. On the next page, page 4, on line 159 is the Senate's HMO surcharge. On line 165,
this is if folks want to know, this is unchanged from what was presented last Friday on the HMO surcharge. That is what it was last week.
Mr. Albrecht.
Madam Chair, on line 165 is the Senate's position with respect to the nursing facility surcharge. It's also the same as was discussed on Friday, as is line 171 and ICFDD surcharge. On line 177 is the governor's proposal for diabetic testing strips that basically creates certain preferred brands and encourages providers to use those brands. Line 182 is the governor's provision relating to the state maximum allowable cost. It makes the price of drugs administered in clinics the same as in a pharmacy. On line 188 is the governor's proposal for child and teen checkup rates. This recalculates MA rates to account for free vaccines for kids that are available from the Department of Health, and the providers currently get the vaccines for free. Going to the next page, page 5, on line 217, this is one of the governor's Reform 2020 initiatives. Although the governor presented his Reform 2020 proposals as a package contingent on federal approval, in fact, there were some items in that package that actually did not require federal approval in order to implement, and the Senate has taken some of those items and put them into our budget. This is one of them.
You know, four members as well, and the public, on the ones that we just skipped over that aren't in the Senate's main article, there is a contingent article that covers most of the Reform 2020 package. And that is on a different spreadsheet, and it's in a different article of the bill. So it's not that we're just totally not doing it. It's that we're doing it as the package, as was presented by the administration, and it'll be covered separately. So we're going to skip some of those Reform 2020s, except those, as Mr. Albrecht mentioned, where no federal approval was required, and it saved money, and we thought it was good policy. Those ones we took and built into the main tracking spreadsheet.
Mr. Thank you. Mr. Elbeck?
Madam Chair, on line 217, this is a Reform 2020 provision that allows people on a ventilator, instead of going to a nursing home for 30 days, to stay at home and get the enhanced budget that goes with their ventilator eligibility. On line 248 is the ICLS provision. This is a governor's provision from the Reform 2020. It provides services and options that allow seniors to stay in their own home longer, avoiding more expensive care and service options. Turning the page to page 6 is another Reform 2020 initiative that does not require federal approval. It's crisis diversion and discharge planning. It creates specialists, 5 of them in 5 regions throughout the state, to work with people on CADI waivers who are hospitalized because of a mental or behavioral health crisis, and works with them to get necessary services to manage their conditions and avoid future hospitalizations. On line 298 is the governor's proposal with respect to modernizing DHS technology systems. We need to get into the detail here. On line 300 is the amount for the health insurance exchange that is related to that bill when it was passed that was not paid for in that bill. And on line 301 is a Senate allocation for a scalable systems modernization proposal for the DHS technology systems.
And the balance, Madam Chair, would be carried in the contingent article.
Mr. Elbert?
Madam Chair, turning the page on page 7 on line 331.
Autism.
Go ahead.
Autism.
We're not doing it.
Okay. You're right.
Madam Chair, on line 331 is Senate's proposal for nursing facility rebasing in the amounts indicated there.
The rebasing is, you know, our attempt here is to try to, we've been trying to rebase for a very, very long time to bring a little bit of additional equity into the nursing home funding formula. And so this would give a larger rate to those nursing home, a larger rate increase to those nursing homes that have the greatest disparity between the costs incurred and the rate that they're paid. And that inequity keeps growing and growing. And as we add money just to percentage increases, it actually tends to exacerbate that disparity. And so through the rebasing, we're, everybody gets some increase, but we try to target it more heavily to those that are struggling the most in terms of the disparity between the rates paid and the costs incurred for providing the service. And so it's a different approach than either the governor or the House, but I think it's a very good point to keep the conversation open.
Mr. Elbert.
Madam Chair, on lines 335 and 339 are governor's proposals to suspend statutory increases related to nursing facilities. On line 351 is a version of Senate Files 599, Senator Eakin's bill, with respect to rate increases for waiver providers. This is 1% on January 1st, 2015, and an additional 1% on July 1st, 2015. On line 361 is a Senate position that repeals a provision enacted in 2011 that is a duplicative and unnecessary requirement on disabled people. On line 368 is a governor's proposal with respect to waiver management improvements. The Senate includes this provision but not the FTEs for it. Similarly, on line 373 is a governor's quality initiative with the Senate includes the policy and not the FTEs. Also, for the waiver provider standards, they are in the bill. The FTEs to implement them are not, and neither is the admin money to do that. On line 389 is a governor's proposal to enhance audit activity for nursing homes. This will lead to recoveries, and that's where the savings come from. On line 395 is Senate File 159, Senator Sharon's bill, with respect to bed closures and a swap of beds between two facilities in Cottonwood and Nicolet counties with a rate adjustment for the facility that is closing the beds. Line 399 is Senator Sieben, Senate File 1230, that corrects a DHS error with respect to a moratorium exception in Dakota County. Moving on to page 9, on line 403 of Senate File 110 is Senator Newman's bill that does the same thing in McLeod County. On line 407 is the governor's proposal for restoring the planned closure rate adjustment for nursing facilities. On line 414 is a governor's proposal that is largely technical and deals with shifting money and accounting for past mistakes in the appropriation for the HIV rebate adjustment. On line 418 is Senator Hayden, Senate File 1101, that modifies the residency ratio restriction and lifts a cap on the number of disabled people that can live in certain facilities. Line 422 is Senate File 980, Senator Marty's bill that repeals the TEFRA fee increases. On line 426 is Senator Franson, Senate File 408, that has a fetal alcohol syndrome grant. On line 430 is Senator Rest, Senate File 1302, that includes appropriations for problem gambling treatment services from the lottery fund. On line 440 is Senator Pappas's Senate File 115, Child Care Assistance Absent Days. This is 25 days, but there is no medical exemption as Senator Pappas's bill was introduced. Line 446 is Senator Clausen's Senate File 267 that allows child care assistance for a disabled caretaker with serious mental illness. On line 402 is Senator Rosen's bill that allows child care assistance for a disabled adoptive caretaker with an employed spouse. I'm not sure, honestly, if it's a spouse or just the other person who makes it a two-person household. Turning the page 10, on line 457 is the Senate's initiative on child care provider rate increase. This is 2% beginning July 1st, 2013. On line 470 is a Senate position with respect to relative and custody, adoption and relative custody rates. This is a 2% increase beginning July 1st, 2013. On line 475 is, there were three Senate authors, Senator Eaton, Senator Marty, and Senator Hayden, of this provision that repeals the MFIP family cap. This does it a little bit differently. It delays it 1 year from what they had in their bills beginning on July 1st, 2014.
Let me back up a little bit and talk about, Madam Chair, the adoption and relative custody rate increase and how it functions. This was an alternative to the governor's North Star Care proposal that's come forward many times, and there is a growing inequity between adoption assistance and relative custody agreements and on the one hand, and foster care on the other hand. And what this does is several things. It actually caps the foster care growth. Foster care has always had a COLA. It's largely paid for it by the counties. We won't see it on these sheets here, but the counties will see some relief from removal of the COLA on the foster care. And adoption assistance and relative custody, that's a 2% increase for those new cases because we're seeking permanency for those children who are today in situations where that are not permanent. And so we're trying to get the best return on investment, and so we're able to make a modest investment in that. Also included in this is putting adoption assistance in the forecast. It has never been a forecast program, and it is expected to continue for a very long time. So we're going to forecast adoption assistance and instruct the department to engage in a broader stakeholder work group set of meetings to try to determine a more stable way to put these three programs together and really understand the interactions between them, with the anticipation that we could do further work in a subsequent session. But this, I think, starts to stop the growing disparity, shrink it a little bit, and look at better approaches to move forward.
Mr. Albrecht.
Madam Chair, on line 482 is a Senate proposal to increase the MFIP transitional standard beginning October 1st, 2015. On line 490 is the governor's MFIP proposal with some modifications in the Senate. You need to get into the details. On line 496, the Senate drops the local strategies grants. That was one-time spending that didn't fit within the Senate's target. And on the next page, you can't really see it. There's not a description, but there is a component in the governor's proposal that relates to home visiting for teen parents that the Senate thought was duplicative of what's going on in the Department of Health with respect to home visiting. On page 11, on line 509, is Senator Sharon's bill, also a governor's proposal with respect to expanding the parent support outreach program statewide. On line 517 is the governor's adoption assistance caseload adjustment. On line 521 is a Senate position to repeal a provision enacted in 2012 that is not yet implemented. It is a rate change for a specific GRH provider. On line 525 is a relatively technical provision that allows the state to use existing state expenditures to draw down additional federal revenue. On line 535 is a governor's proposal to establish a clinical care coordination benefit in the medical assistance program. On line 541 is a governor's proposal that is included on the Senate side to establish a family psychoeducation benefit in medical assistance. On line 545 is Senator Franson's bill, Senate File 254, that includes appropriations for food shelf programs. On line 549 is Senator Claussen's Senate File 1078 that includes appropriations for Advocating Change Together. On line 553 is Senator Sharon's bill that expands mental health crisis response services. This is a governor's proposal. The Senate funds this proposal at the ongoing level. That in the governor's proposal, for reasons we did not understand, it went from $1 million in fiscal year 15 to $750,000 in 2016. So the Senate used the lower number in the 2014-15 biennium. On page 12, line 557, this is the governor's ARMS proposal that basically restructures the policy and rates in the program to try to sustain the program. On line 563 is the governor's proposal for mental health specialty treatment services. This is for individuals who don't need to be at the Anoka RTC because they've been stabilized. It creates a new specialty service, a 24-hour medically staffed outpatient service. It's an intermediate step between hospital-level care and return to the community. On line 568 is the governor's proposal for SBIRT. On line 572 is the governor's proposal to eliminate regional treatment center transition grants. On line 576 is a no-cost item, Senate File 373, Senator Rosen. To establish a MA coverage for a psychiatric consult by psychologists and APRNs. On line 580, a Senator Lori's Senate File 264 that creates MA eligibility for mental health certified family peer specialists. On line 590 is the governor's one-time reduction in the CD fund. On line 596 is a governor's proposal for one-time and time-limited mental health transition services. This is for people who are ready to move from the Anoka RTC and the security hospital. It provides support services necessary to help people transition to the community from state institutions. It's a flexible source of funding intended to cover expenses that wouldn't be covered by other sources of funding. Turning the page to page 13, on line 613 is the governor's proposal to accommodate a growth in the Minnesota Sex Offender Program. On line 618 is the governor's proposal for a new fee schedule for waiver providers. The Senate's position is one half of the governor's fees. On line 623 is an Affordable Care Act provision of the governor's relating to MA provider screening. On line 640 is the governor's position for child care provider investigations and data analytics. This is intended to investigate child care fraud and recover money. You can see that in the tails it does begin to generate savings. Turning the page, page 14, line 655, is the governor's proposal to expand surveillance and integrity views. The purpose is to investigate suspected MA fraud. The governor requested six FTEs for this proposal, and the Senate is funding four of them. On line 661 is the governor's proposal related to MA provider recoveries. What this does is identify overpayments that, when they're identified, the state has to share it's the amount identified, half of it with the federal government, without regard to whether or not we've actually collected it. And this, some providers have closed their businesses to avoid the state actually trying to come along and collect the money. So this establishes new mechanisms for the Department of Human Services to collect the overpayments in those instances. On line 668 is Senator Latz's Senate File 7 that has licensing provisions for guardians and conservators and background studies.
You know, on that one, Madam Chair, I did just get notice that the fiscal note is being opened up again and taken a look at, so we may have to revisit that one.
Mr. Alder.
Madam Chair, on line 674 and 679 are the governor's proposals for background studies as they emerge from the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Except that,
Lori.
Madam Chair, I believe these are the provisions where we didn't have the committee reports in time to actually get them incorporated. So anybody who goes and reads these, the bill does not have the judiciary amendments incorporated, but they will be. Absolutely. We are tracking that as an item that needs to be addressed and will be as we move forward, but we wanted to these items did get drafted and travel separately and went through the Judiciary Committee, got a hearing, and made it through as good policy that is intended to be incorporated in this bill, but the amendments that were adopted in Judiciary will be forthcoming.
Mr. Alber.
Madam Chair, on line 696 is the governor's proposal for newborn screening. This is the DHS side of the proposal that's actually on the MDH side. On line 700, as I told Senator Lori, this is perhaps the most unfortunate page break in spreadsheet history. It is the Minnesota Care Reform. This line shows only the totals. In fiscal year 15, this proposal will result in an additional 118,000 eligible people, and by the end of fiscal year 2017, 154,000 individuals. If you turn to the next page, you can see the detail of that. Importantly, for some people anyway, on line 714 to 716 is the funding for the health insurance exchange, where this program would be administered. I don't know if that's really the right word, but people will join into it through the exchange. Line 729 is the governor's proposal for appeals. These are appeals that are going to result because there are so many new people being eligible for health care programs, and it's much easier for them to request an appeal. On line 734 is the governor's proposal relating to mental health care treatment provided in foster care. On line 738 is a part of Senator Sharon's Senate File 265 regarding mental health first aid training. On line 742 is a governor's proposal to provide MA coverage for electronic tablets that are used as augmentative communication devices. On line 746 is the governor's proposal, and also Senate File 497, Senator Conan's proposal with respect to the security hospital site in Wilmer. On line 741 on page 16 is the governor's proposal for all-day K. There are offsetting savings in the child care programs on our side. The Senate savings are larger because my understanding is the Senate K-12 bill includes more all-day K than the governor did. On line 755 is Senator Claussen's Senate File 450, appropriations for the Family Ask the Fame program. On line 759 is Senator Marty's Senate File 1450 relating to unenforceable child support case closure authority. It does not include the money, but it does include the policy provisions. On line 769 is money for the Homeless Youth Act. These were provisions in Senate File 565 and 797, Senator Dibble and Senator Claussen bills. On line 773 is Senator Pappas's Senate File 384, the Safe Harbor for Sexually Exploited Youth provisions. On line 777 is repealing a previous long-term care provider reduction of 1.67%. This is Senator Hoffman's Senate File 553. On line 785 are Senate transfers from the Health Care Access Fund to the General Fund to pay for MFIT populations who have moved. And line 791 is also a transfer from the Health Care Access Fund to the General Fund to provide additional revenue to support spending in this bill. That, Madam Chair, is the end of the Department of Human Services appropriations on page 17. Moving to the Department of Health on line 1115 is the governor's proposal with respect to increasing core public health activities. On line 1122 is Senator Lori's Senate File 930, the Text for Life bill. On Senate File 1562 is Senator Franson's bill with appropriations for the Minnesota Poison Information Center. On line 1130 is part of Senator Sharon's Senate File 582 requiring certain maternal depression reduction plans and reports. Line 1134 is a non-general fund provision in the governor's budget regarding healthcare facility blueprint reviews. On line 1138 is Senator Franson's bill, I do not have the number, to increase funding for the statewide health improvement program. It also includes Senator Benson's, I believe, bill that I don't have the number for, that had a return on taxpayer investment study, and it would apply that to the SHIP program. Line 1143 is the governor's health care licensing reform. The Senate numbers reflect an agreement that has been reached between the administration and the providers, I believe.
And results in?
Senator.
Madam Chair, slightly higher costs that we carry, I believe, through a lowering of the fees that the home care licensed activities would incur.
Mr. Albert.
Madam Chair, on line 1148 is the governor's initiative relating to protecting groundwater from geothermal heat systems. On line 1153 is the governor's proposal and also Senator Sieben's Senate File 473 for newborn screening. On line 1160 is the governor's proposal for cost recovery for lab testing. The next several provisions that are all zeroed out are in another jurisdiction in the Senate. Line 1203 is the governor's proposal with a small amount of savings for, less building space. Madam Chair, on line 1207 is the government's proposal to modify the environmental lab assessment program. On line, the next page on line, page 19 is the governor's proposal to modify the mortuary science regulations. On line 1219 is the governor's proposal for the ombudsman for families. On line 1223 is the governor's proposal for the disability council. On line 1227, within the Board of Nursing Home Administrators, there are several items. One is on line 1231. This is part of Senator Sharon's Senate File 582 that would have the health boards post on their websites educational materials relating to maternal depression. And the rest of the lines there are also a Senator Sharon bill, Senate File 588, relating to background studies. And on line 1238 is a proposal for the Board of Marriage and Family Therapy on the Senate side that is a reduction in their fees. Madam Chair, that is the end of the spreadsheet and the end of that part of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Albert. Senator Lori?
You know, having not heard from folks up at on the floor yet, maybe we can quickly try to step through the contingent article. I will take note also that we do have the appropriation article ready, but I think it'd be good if we just work through the contingent article, and we will make the appropriations article available as soon as we leave. If we open it up right now, it'd be mayhem and nobody would be able to listen to the contingent article, which should be fairly quick to step through.
Senator Lori, it's being passed around to members and public right now.
We'll start as soon as the members have it, because I am anticipating we're going to be called up to the floor shortly. Yes.
Senator Lori, I think all members have it.
Yes.
Mr. Albert?
Madam Chair, the important thing to note about this article is that on line 7, the general fund appropriations in 2014 and 15 are zero, so there is no impact on the general fund target for these provisions being in the bill if they were to be implemented when a waiver is approved by the federal government. That said, on line 86 is the first Reform 2020 proposal. This is to enhance vulnerable adult protections. It creates a statewide toll-free number to report suspected abuse, neglect, and exploitation of vulnerable adults. The Senate funds the provision, but not the FTEs. On line 95, this is basically the federal revenue that would be available if the waiver is approved. On line 107 is the governor's first contact proposal. This contains initiatives to provide information to people and their families to help them understand their options for long-term care services, promote access to services in a way that keeps people in their own homes longer, thus avoiding more expensive public programs. It includes enhanced assessments and a report card to provide information to consumers. The Senate funds the proposal and not the FTEs. Turning the page, on page 2, on line 124, is the governor's critical access study and service development. This includes initiatives to support planning and development for future long-term care needs at the statewide level, including a critical access study to determine where the need for services is, a gaps analysis, and capacity development of providers, among other things. On line 149 is the Community First Services and Supports. This is the reform of the PCA program. It's intended to become a more flexible and responsive program to facilitate transition out of institutional care and prevent or delay needed access to higher cost level of care in institutional settings. It retains eligibility for existing PCA populations. The Senate funds the proposal and not the FTEs. On line 186 is the provision titled Empower, Encourage Independence. This would provide employed people with support services to promote stability and mitigate the development of situations that lead to access to more intensive, higher cost services. The Senate funds the proposal and not the FTEs and not the contract. I believe it's an evaluation contract. Turning the page, on page 3, on line 175, is the Housing Stability Services demonstration. This proposal seeks federal approval of a waiver that would allow FFP on current state spending in the GRH program for GA populations. The additional money would be used to develop coordinated service strategies that promote housing stability. Madam Chair, on line 183 is the contingent side of the governor's technology systems modernization request for money. And Madam Chair, that's the end of the contingent article.
Thank you, Mr. Albrecht. Senator Lurie.
Well, Madam Chair, that is an initial walkthrough. I know most of the folks in this room are pretty familiar with working through these spreadsheets. I hope it makes sense. We've worked very, very hard with an incredibly difficult budget target to generate some funds within this division that we can use to make sure that we didn't have to cut core services deeper than they've been in the last 10 years. And we've been able to make some critical investments in areas that are of growing concern to people across Minnesota. And, you know, we're going to keep talking about every single one of these provisions. With that, I would recommend that we lay Senate File 1034 on the table and head up to session, come back later this afternoon, and take some members' questions and public testimony.
Senator Sharon,
can we leave these things here, or will this be?
And we will be able to return to this room. I did. We were going to be kicked out for other meetings, and I got that fixed. So we're going to be able to retain this room. We're going to lock the door, so members can leave their stuff here, and staff doesn't have to try to put it on the cart and set it up in another place. We're going to come back here this afternoon.
With that, the bill will be laid over and the committee will be in recess. Thank you.